Hey everybody, welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. This is your host, Brett Williams, and today on the show it's Bradford Werner. Bradford Werner is the host and founder of thisisclassicalguitar.com. That's a great website. It's got a lot of reviews on it. He reviews albums. He reviews... what else does he review? He reviews objects. What do you call them? You know, gear. Guitars. I think I picked up my guitar support as a result of one of his videos. So, you know, I've been wanting to talk to all the people that are moving and shaking online because we're all, you know, glued to these channels right now. So this is part of that series, if you will, if we can call this a season. I'm sorry I haven't been releasing this super frequently. I actually have been teaching a lot. The teaching is back in full force. I am not short of students at all. I have an almost completely full schedule, and I'm very grateful for that. It's all online. As you know, in New York, a lot of the kids are being sent back, so it's the safest thing. It's the best way to go for them, and it does afford me some extra time, but that extra time is getting absorbed with me doing a little bit of work on dystonia. I just kind of want to tell you guys who I'm working with. I'm not going to tell you whether or not it's a foolproof method. I'm not going to tell you whether or not it's completely worth it, but I will tell you that me and Yogi Panappa, the way you spell that is P-O-N-A-P-P-A, have been working on dystonia with me. He's been gracious enough to help me with that for several years. So that's my guy. That's who I'm working with. I cannot vouch for whether it will cure dystonia on my end yet. As soon as that happens, I'll let you know. But he is a super sweet guy and very patient. And so him and I have decided that we're going to keep on working on this through COVID, I guess, because that would be something that would be great, is to come out of that with a fully functioning right hand, be able to play some of that old rep. That would, you know, it would make me cry tears of joy. So I, you know, I'm taking a little bit of a time out and doing that as I continue to promote the album. I was on Classical Guitar Corner with Simon Powis, and I was on Classical Guitar Live with Tony Morris, and that was both times were super fun. I don't know if the Classical Guitar Alive has come out, but the Simon Powis has, and it's always great talking to him. And if you're new to the show because you heard about it through that show, welcome. Simon Powis' favorite thing that I do, according to him, at the end of that interview, was when I say, the show is sponsored by rosettapodcast.com/insider. Don't go to rosettastone.com. I can't even do my old bit. This is a bit from a couple of years ago, I guess I used to do. And I think it cost me the sponsorship by Audible. But what did I used to say? You say audibletrial.com/insider. You got to say /insider because if you go to audible.com, don't go there. It's a porn site. That's what I used to say to make sure that people went to that. But we are sponsored by rosettapodcast.com/insider. You got to do the /insider or I'm not getting a single dime. I'm not seeing anything. I'm starving. I'm dying in a ditch. If you don't go to rosettapodcast.com/insider, you can go there. You can get a discount on a monthly membership to learn the language of your choice. I don't know if you can fluctuate between languages, but that's pretty awesome. It used to be very expensive to do that. Now I think you can get memberships for well under $10 a month. So rosettapodcast.com/insider to help out the show, and always sponsored by SavageClassical.com. That's S-A-V-A-G-E, Classical.com. SavageClassical.com. Go there. Richard will help you out. He'll help you pick out the guitar of your dreams. You tell him that I sent you. Tell him that Brett sent you to SavageClassical.com. Richard is about to sign up for another, you know, year or so of sponsorship. So I thank him for that. That's SavageClassical.com. So we've been teaching. You know, I hope you guys are being safe. I know it's super tempting to get out there and sort of start eating with your friends again. And it seems like, you know, the idea is to be a bubble, and that bubble just, it keeps getting bigger and bigger, doesn't it? It's like, and I don't know if we're supposed to be doing this. It's not safe out there. I don't care who's telling you it's safe. It's not that safe. There's stuff happened. People are still picking it up. The kids are getting it at the schools. It's tough. This stuff's starting to wear on stuff. There's stuff going on in families. There's a lot of, you know, stress and drama and stuff going on. It's hardcore out there. And, you know, everybody just be nice to each other, I guess. I'm trying to do everything that I can do with the show to get it out. I'm trying to do everything I can do to promote. I'm trying to do everything I can do for my hand. But do I miss just hanging out with a bunch of friends. Never thought I would say that. It was really a relief to me at the beginning of this to not have constant birthday parties and stuff to go to where people constantly bugging me about hanging out. You know, I don't got so much in the way of career, but I definitely have a lot of friends that I've cultivated. And it wasn't always that way. I mean, I spent a lot of time, nurturing those friendships, but I think it got a little out of hand there. It seemed like every single day there was something I was doing or neglecting to do for people that I loved. And then the COVID was not a welcome break, but it was a break from all that. And now we're back. People sort of expect you to kind of be places. People are asking what you're doing. They don't want you to go to the parks anymore. They want you over for dinner. And, you know, it's just not right. I don't think we're supposed to be doing that yet. Right, folks? Who knows? I don't know. This is tough stuff. But I will say that I am interviewing a lot of people. I interviewed Bradford. I interviewed the boys over at Guitar Salon International. I'm having Matt Hensley on the show. I'm going to be interviewing him this Friday. This is October 7th right now. So I'm interviewing him. That's going to be October 9th, and then that'll be out in a couple of weeks. So, you know, there's stuff happening. Thank you to all of you who donated to the show. There aren't that many of you, but all of you who donated, you can go to the all-new BrettWilliamsMusic.com. It's all new. It's designed by my good friend Nico Trout. It's a beautiful site. I think it's super cool, super stylish. I don't really think there's too many sites like this in our small little industry, so... I was overjoyed with what he did with it. It's not like other sites. It's not like other classical guitar sites, so it may take you a second to get used to, but it is like a lot of other, I guess, a lot of other sites that are out there. I think it's beautiful. I think it's great. Real simple. Go over there. Go to the support section. All right. Help me out here. This is not easy to do. This composition, this performing, this recording, this interviewing. You know, the editing, all that stuff. So if you want to help out, go to the support section of BrettWilliamsMusic.com. And if you don't, that's fine. Go do something else. Go take a bath. Do whatever makes you feel good. Just keep on listening to the show and supporting the sponsors. And if you want to donate, BrettWilliamsMusic.com, 1T and Brett. All right, let's get on with it. Let's get on to my interview with Mr. Bradford Werner. Like, I've always wondered where you are.
Yeah, me too sometimes. I'm in Canada, and then I'm on the West Coast, so I'm in British Columbia. So I was in Victoria for the last 20 years, but I just moved this month and bought a house up in Trail, BC, in the Kootenays area. So it's a little bit more remote, but it's kind of a new chapter of my life. So I'm kind of excited about that and setting up a studio and stuff like that. Victoria was on Vancouver Island, which is like a huge island the size of Taiwan, that's just like a little bit away from Vancouver. Mm-hmm. So I've been there for a long time, and now I'm kind of more in the center of the province. I'm actually quite close to Spokane, down in Washington State there. So I'm pretty far down by the border there.
So you can get to Spokane pretty easily then.
If I had to.
If someone was holding a gun to your head, which is not outside of the realm of possibility in Spokane.
You're in New York, right?
I am. Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn right now. Brooklyn. But first of all, this is so surprising. I just did not know you were in Canada. Do you have anything? I must have looked at the about page or whatever. There must have been something on This Is Classical Guitar. But you're not like that. You're kind of
I'm not like what? Canadian?
Yo, you're very Canadian. Now that I know you're Canadian, I'm like, yeah, this guy's totally Canadian in the sense that you're nice, you're humble. You don't kind of, when you do things, it doesn't seem as self-serving as say this show or other things, sort of like flamboyantly. This is classical guitar has become a real trusted source, I would say. You know, for sort of calm, measured discussions. It's obviously very positive. You're not ripping people down. You're sort of you've really provided people with in a lot of the same ways that Simon has with Classical Guitar Corner, a place. Of course, you're doing more. You do a lot of reviews, and you sort of are spreading awareness about projects. Stuff like that. It's sort of a place for that, whereas Simon's is more of an educational podcast. But I'd say the tone is similar. It seems like you're really in service to the instrument and not really trying to push any sort of detectable agenda via, you know, some of the other media sources, whether it be Soundboard Magazine, which is an arm of the GFA, or, you know, sort of like that. It seems like you're kind of just in it for the love of it. You're not trying to promote something. And something about that seems uniquely Canadian now that I know that you're Canadian.
People definitely have given me positive feedback about that. And, you know, I started it all for my students originally, just like on a Tumblr site, you know, on the social media site.
Like the picture thing?
Yeah, like Tumblr, like the microblogging thing. So yeah. I started it for my students just to share videos with them of great players. And also to kind of like give them supplemental like lessons from what we talked about in our in-person lessons. Mm-hmm. And so the vibe of the site, to the dismay of any business concerns, the vibe of the site was always kind of just centered on helping my students. But then lots of other people just seemed to really enjoy that and enjoyed following it as well. And then it just kind of grew from there. But it's always kind of retained that like for students. Like this is classical guitar. What is classical guitar? Well, this is high quality stuff. And, so it's kept that vibe. And although I sell some sheet music and stuff now, through my other site, Warner Guitar Editions, This Is Classical Guitar tried to keep, that kind of just open and
pure.
Helpful, pure kind of thing going on. I mean, it's a horrible business plan, by the way. Horrible business plan.
Hey, you're talking to the king of horrible business plans. My music history, podcast did not take off like I thought it would in November. I am the worst when it comes to doing things that make money. And it seems like I would assume that you are too, in the sense you're doing these Warner editions, which are also, a lot of those are free. A lot of those are super helpful. I feel like I've used some of them for my students so some ensemble pieces that you've transcribed.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. It's almost like I'd see the Forrester or whatever. Whatever that guy's name is. I got to talk to him too.
Forrester Guitar Ensembles.
Yeah. Those are really helpful too. Just sort of an online resource. But you know, when you started This Is Classical Guitar, did you do that? You said you did that for your students. So that was a while ago. How long has this website been going?
That's a great question. I think it's been going for like 9 years now.
Yeah.
But it's changed a lot, you know, over time. Like I changed platforms and all sorts of stuff like that. So I lost a whole bunch of subscribers and then gained them back. The email newsletter is almost like a thing unto itself. It's like lots of people follow the newsletter, but they don't even know that I have a site sometimes or like,
it's
incredible. But again, it was for my students. So, everything I used to do on the site and to some extent still do, all those editions were for my students. Like I wanted to create editions for my students. And although now I've been starting to put out more like unfingered editions, like free stuff too. And like some pros have emailed me saying like, yeah, we like that. Give us more scores that have no fingering because we like putting our own in and stuff like that. So I think it'll continue to expand and evolve.
Oh, so you're trying to like kind of customize, make some custom scores.
Well, it's always interesting with the PDFs. I mean, I can do whatever I want. Like if someone requests a score that's unfingered, like, I can just post it. I'll just remove all the fingering and put it up there and people can grab it. And
yeah, you've got it. You're all set to go with that.
It's very flexible.
So when you're talking about just the PDF format of creating scores as opposed to a Sibelius format, or what are we talking
about? Oh, no, I was using Sibelius. I actually use the free open source MuseScore now.
Yeah, that's what I originally used.
Yeah.
And I moved to Sibelius.
Yeah, the new Sibelius has kind of turned me off, their whole interface and 1990s sign-in stuff. because I really loved Sibelius 6, the old one. But
that's what I have. I have an old edition.
Yeah, and I actually even have a whole computer now that I won't let it update because I need to keep Sibelius 6 because it won't work with the new Mac updates.
Oh my gosh.
It's like a whole separate computer
with all that stuff on it. So you're using MuseScore right now?
Yeah. And actually, my wife, Erin Fisher, who's an author, but also a pianist, she's been writing out all the scores and then I edit them and put in fingering and then she goes over them and I go over them. And so we have a process now to like really be efficient with it.
Oh, that's great. It's good to get a partner on this because having a partner on things is really key, especially when you're doing that much work. And you got a lot of stuff up there.
Yeah, it's been growing rapidly.
What is your goal with that at this point? Like your goal right now with Werner Editions?
Survival.
Survival?
I try to keep up with everything. Yeah. I was always running the site and the editions, on the side. I was teaching at the Victoria Conservatory of Music for the last like 16 years.
God.
And I just left it. But it was always kind of a part-time job, this website stuff. But I'm doing it full-time now, so it's a little bit different. But I'm still kind of getting set up with it. So what my overall goals are, it's still just to like help students out and have a wide variety of music on there, but I also have like some method books and I have a graded series and stuff like that. But I've kind of decided to make sure that all the lessons on my site are free and to remain free for everyone to view. Like if you can't buy the sheet music, it's okay. You probably have the music in another book. So all the lessons are usually free and you can, the idea too is just to have people, you know, watch the videos regularly. And even if they don't play the pieces, they can learn from the lessons that come after. And when I discuss on a weekly basis, discuss aspects of learning a new piece, regardless of what that piece might be.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you've been around quite a while and you look very young. I mean, do you mind me asking? Thanks. You said 16 years. So I'm assuming we're probably in early 40s. Is that what?
Yeah, I'm 38.
38. Okay, great. Yeah. Well, that's, see, I guess 38-year-olds are starting to look young to me now. I'm like, oh, well, 38's like, that's a full grown man.
I don't know.
Who's been teaching for 16?
I'm still working on it.
You're still working on it? As far as, the name, This Is Classical Guitar. So it's something about that name too. What was the genesis of that? Because I think you know that something about that is very, it's got an edge to it. I don't know what it is from a marketing standpoint. Maybe I'm definitely outside of my wheelhouse and talking about this, but
it's an awfully long domain name, but it's hard to get domain names these days.
Classical guitar, this classical guitar, this is classicalguitar.com.
No, but it was really, the intention was really like, because it was for my students and I was, on the West Coast of Canada, they might not know what classical guitar is. And I'm not sure I even know anymore either. But, the term classical guitar, it could mean just so many things, right? Are we talking about the classical era? And if we're talking about earlier, then are we talking about lute music? Like, classical guitar is kind of a tough term to define. And so this is classical guitar. By following the site, you get it. My students would get exposed to what that term might be because they learn if you follow it weekly, you can kind of learn some of the popular repertoire.
Right.
And some of the ideas connected, some of the techniques involved, and to get your head around what classical guitar might mean to some people. Even though obviously it's a very flexible term. I mean, classical guitar could be, Latin American music, it could be jazz, it could be anything, but there does seem to be kind of like in our you know, niche circles, there's some guidelines to what classical might be.
Yeah, there's a through line, and I'd like to talk about that. But as far as that's a great point that you make, is that a lot of these students, I'm assuming a lot of these are probably, you know, talented, but more or less beginners. You know, I don't know about like the region or how it works there. I mean, everything nowadays is these kids are really good. You know, they kind of come in to a college being more or less young professionals, you know, in New York, that seems to be the case, but
less so in
Central California, no offense to them or Canada or whatever,
but I certainly there's bubbles of
yeah. So to them, you know, and I remember being this way, but I remember being young enough to thinking that classical guitar was like Metallica One. You know, it's just like that. That's what a classical
nothing
guitar
else
was.
Matters.
Yeah. I still run into people that are in their 50s who think that that's the case, and they just don't know. Yeah. So, you know, I like that idea that you're like, you're simply trying to explain to these people, this is what classical guitar is. This is Breen playing the lute. This is Paco de Lucia. You know, this is all this stuff mixed into one. Roland Dians, John Williams, you know, just Albanez, just all this stuff. Bach. Yeah. How do you describe it? Because this is the first time I'm really having this conversation on this show, which is surprising. But it is quite a that name, the practical usage of that name is very incendiary, in the sense that like I'm now sort of critically thinking about the fact that we don't really know what this thing is, and yet we sink so much time and money into it, and I'm going on and on, but I also am dealing with this right now, having released the album. And now going on to continue to compose, and at the same time looking at learning outside rep again for the first time in 7 years, six years. So I'm looking at that and I'm going like, what do I do? Like, do I play Bach? Do I play Marilyn? What do I do? What do people want to hear? What do I want to do? I don't even know where to go with it anymore. There's so many different elements to go into. There's new music, there's commissioning works. But for you, and this is classical guitar, did you kind of go through a thought process about that, or did you just sort of just almost in a Pinterest way start posting?
I just started posting. Yeah, it's been a long, long learning curve and things like that. And it wasn't until recently, like the last few years, that I really started to come up with a set plan for the site and stuff like that. Kind of like making sure that I have certain things for students, certain things to support the community or artists, certain things to keep professionals interested, and then trying to, you know, curate the site with those things in mind. But really, for the most part, it's like I wake up every morning and get a big coffee and like try to find something interesting, right? And I just try to post something high quality and interesting. I do try to feature young artists a lot. Those younger artists that just don't really have an avenue to get, you know, for exposure. And also just because it's interesting, like when I'm teaching students, like a lot of these young people, they don't necessarily, like a 12-year-old girl doesn't necessarily want to go watch like 60-year-old men all the time, right? Like the established, you know, pros. So featuring young artists, give them, you know, role models and people to look up to, and makes them feel like it's not just, you know, old guys playing, but there's, you know, lots of different ages and gender and things like that.
That's really important too. Yeah. I think that's where we are going. And that's definitely what your site is doing. Your site is highlighting.
I hope so.
I think that it's getting outside of the establishment a little bit and allowing for new voices to be heard. I mean, that's something that you were doing 5-6 years ago, and now you're saying this is going on for 9 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
What caused you to leave the conservatory recently? Was it COVID or?
It was a combination of things. You know, my wife is a pianist. She also taught at the conservatory, for the same amount of time, 16 years. And, so that's a long time to be at any institution and it was very enjoyable and I loved my students and everything like that. You know, rent was getting pretty high in the city and, I wanted some space to run the site and kind of build a studio, for recording and stuff like that. And, I mean, I would never be able to own a house on the West Coast of Canada. It's like, you need to be a millionaire just to get into the market there.
Yeah.
But moving to the interior is much more affordable. And yeah, COVID definitely pushed us in that direction, though. The conservatory closed for a few months, and we were living in a small apartment, and I was running the site out of this little tiny room in this little apartment. So
yeah,
we decided to kind of explore something new.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know that as you move towards, what's this, Saskatchewan? Is that the next place over?
No.
What's...
You got to learn more about Canada, my friend.
I want to talk about Canada, but I do this on this show. It's like, I'll just zone in on the fact that someone's from Australia, and that's all I want to know about.
Yeah.
And so I do want to talk about Canada, but tell me about...
Tell you about Saskatchewan?
Well, I just saw there's this guy, what's his name? Maki. You know Maki? Moki? Maki?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
He's a Canadian musician, and he did this video, and all he does is sort of make like ambient music that might be used in like a Banana Republic or something. No offense to him. I love it. I love his stuff. But he had this video, and it was just him in this giant, pretty house in the woods in Saskatchewan. Am I saying it right? Saskatchewan?
Sure. Yeah. That sounds
You're
good.
Like, I don't. And I was like, it looked so nice just being like creating in that space. How is it being
Saskatchewan
outside of the city?
Oh, in British Columbia. Really? Well, it's a mix because the town is quite small that I moved to.
Uh-huh.
So like culturally, not much, but like, you know, the proximity to nature is just amazing. Like if I just walk out the door and like, or, you know, even drive 2 minutes, I'm in the forest, and that's pretty cool. Like we went on a hike yesterday, but we didn't have to like travel for an hour to get there or something.
Yeah.
So the proximity to nature is amazing. And just the space is great. Although I was going to say the fresh air, but it's pretty smoky right now because California and Oregon and stuff are burning right now. So we're getting a lot of smoke up here from there.
Oh, wow. That's unfortunate. That's terrible. I didn't know that it was getting all the way up there.
Oh yeah. It's pretty, you can't really see the mountains very well.
We
have our own forest fires here too, but California's got some big ones right now.
So. I thought that it just stopped at the border. Forest fires. I thought that like racism and forest fires stopped at the border and everything was great and not on fire up there.
Oh, I wish racism stopped at the border. Sadly, Canada has its own history and problems as well.
It's amazing how much I and all Americans don't know about that country. It's literally like we think of Montreal, maybe Vancouver.
Right.
You brought up this magical city called Victoria. You know, there's Toronto and I don't
they named all the cities.
That's it. Is that all of it? I mean, that can't be true. There must be like a bustling small college town metropolises everywhere.
No, there's some bigger cities forming in Canada. You know, in every province, there's a few big ones, but those are the big ones. You know your stuff.
Oh, well now we're getting to the part of the program where I admit to people that I don't know anything. It literally, to me, Canada just seems like there's those countries, they're on the border, and then it's just woods and ice and polar bears.
That's actually
and lumberjacks.
That's actually true. But no one lives in those areas really. Like
that's
really
crazy.
All of the population of Canada is really near the border, right? Near the US border. Where like all the major cities are like, you know, right on the border and stuff like that. Like, you know, Toronto and Montreal and all that, it's all down by the Great Lakes there. And Vancouver's only an hour from the US border. And then the rest of the country is just, it's a lot of nature and a lot of woods and natural resources and things like that. Yeah.
So it is that way, right? It's not just like me being like, you know.
Canadians won't feel that way though, because we don't really necessarily get up into that zone of Canada very often, right? Like it's remote, so like we do live in cities and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not spending my time on a Nebraska farm,
you know? Yeah.
I understand. I think that your places though seem magical, beautiful. Tell me about Victoria. What is that where you studied?
I studied a little bit in Victoria. Yep.
You got like a master's there or something, or whatever, uni?
No, actually, I didn't go that direction.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Cool.
Weird, right?
No, like
like all awesome. the people I play with, like in my trio and stuff like that, they have like PhDs and stuff like that. But I had a very strange musical path, I guess. Like I grew up, I took guitar, I was a horrible student and whatnot. And then I went down to Victoria and I took some lessons at the conservatory there. With Murray Vischer, who taught me a lot of modern classical guitar technique. He's over in Calgary now. And then I had it in my head. I wanted to be a jazz star. I wanted to be John McLaughlin, you know? I wanted to be like Mahavishnu Orchestra.
Yeah. You
wanted I'd taken classical mostly in my life, but I was really into like metal and electric guitar as well. And then, you know, kind of got into jazz. So I went to jazz school in Vancouver for a while. But I continued to take classical lessons, and I just couldn't let classical go. Like, jazz was awesome, and I love jazz, but studying jazz for, like, forever, essentially, was, like, too much for my brain. And although I loved that I went there even just briefly, because I learned, you know, a different world of guitar and a different world of music that was very helpful when I came back to classical at a higher level. Because when I came back to classical, it was really interesting. Like, I already knew all my scales over the whole fretboard, and I knew chords all over the fretboard, like from the jazz studies, right?
Yeah, you had some fretboard harmony in you.
Yeah, like a lot of it. To the extent that I noticed, even today, when students come out of even master's degrees, they don't necessarily know that stuff. They might be pretty good sight readers, and they great players, of course.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily know the guitar, because the classical world is not really... doesn't really give you the time always in school to study that stuff.
Which you're is usually shocking. Like, I mean, it's amazing.
I know, but it's like you're so hardcore, like on the repertoire, right? Like you have to study your repertoire to such a high level that you don't really have time to like go through a whole bunch of like method books on like, you know, harmony on the fretboard and stuff like
right.
that. So that was really helpful. Like when I went back to classical and went through like the Aaron Shearer scale supplement book, that was like no problem. The fingerings, I already knew all the fingerings. I just had to like up my level of reading a little bit. Because like I said, when I was a kid, I did not study so hard.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, none of us did. If I was told to read
some of us did. not me. <though. laughs>
Some people did. That's an interesting, I mean, that's always been sort of the thing that, you know, that I think about as lacking in the world. And I'm starting to actually do it now. I've got a couple of jazz, you know, I work with kids.
Yeah.
And one of the benefits to that I have found is if I'm not teaching classical, sometimes I start learning about other things. And one of the things that I've, you know, been blessed with in that situation has been learning about jazz. So that someone's got a jazz audition. 10 years ago, some of my students were getting older and then they would audition for jazz in high school. I did not know what I was doing. I had to learn. And I tried to learn. It's really complicated, but it's like, I think just like learning, it blew my mind as a classical guitarist that a D13 chord was called that because it included the seventh. And that's why it wasn't called a six chord. Things like that why didn't I know that with a master's degree? Why didn't I understand that? Why didn't I understand that all your, you know, how to finger all these chords, not just finger them, you know, but actually incorporate our classical knowledge, which is a note by note knowledge, a real, you know, knowledge of the way that of the notes we're playing, with, I couldn't really reconcile that with just chord shapes.
Yep,
and reduction. Relatively recently, until like the last decade.
And reduction of those chords too, you know, letting your students know that like, oh, you don't always have to play that, you know, flat nine. You can just play a seven chord. Like that won't mess up the ensemble if you just reduce it to its building blocks or even to a triad, right?
Right. The flat nine is in the bass, so the flat nine is part of the melody. Like it's you don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, like or just like yeah, they'll just knowing about those chords and the actual function of the chords, which classical people know about. We know about it in our music theory courses.
Right.
But we haven't necessarily had to apply it to our instrument in a practical sense.
Yeah.
Because it would be kind of like, you wouldn't want to do that in one of your classical compositions. Like just drop the extensions on that chord. Don't worry about it.
Exactly. But yeah, thinking about it in that way has been so much fun. And, you know, I had my bassist from the first iteration of the quartet, and I were talking once, and he was saying, you know, I really wish I went to Berkeley just a little bit. He's like, yeah, just for maybe get a master's there or something there. Just not because I buy into all the stuff that, you know, classical music isn't important to learn about. I don't agree with that at all. I think it's the fundamental. But the idea of learning about the guitar rather than the piano as being the center of academic,
right,
you know, resource as far as understanding theory. You know, yeah, we all are forced to do piano. I'll probably talk about this more when I talk to Matt Hensley, because he was the guy who, I had hand problems in college and I couldn't type on a keyboard, like a computer keyboard or a keyboard, without getting flare-ups.
Yeah, me too.
You got that too?
Yeah, actually, that's one of the reasons I like left jazz school, is that I just couldn't play anymore. I was wrapped up and all the scales on electric guitar.
Yeah, no, it's, well, so then I ended up petitioning with the brass there in Texas. I was like, look, I, you know, if I can do theory, fretboard harmony instead of keyboard harmony, which is required in almost all colleges,
yeah,
you know, will that work? And they agreed to it. And I worked with Matt, with a young Matt Hensley, and we, you know, he started doing that for the first time with me as his, you know, student.
So I'm sure he did it well, because he does a lot of things well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what a thinker. I mean, I just had a conversation with him, and yeah, you start to realize why he has had any success that he's had. He is literally one of the smartest people, if not the smartest person in our industry, and kindest and thoughtfulest.
Yeah.
Thoughtfulist is a word that I created. It's not a word Matt Hensley would use. But I, you know, I, so anyway, so you were,
so, well, after I left the
jazz, so this, I had the opposite sort of.
Yeah. Thing. Although, I mean, I grew up with classical guitar, but
yeah,
after jazz school, I went back to the conservatory, and I actually studied for 4 years without, not in a program. So I actually took 4 years and just played. I like played full concerts with like full repertoire. And I took like independent theory musicianship classes, uh-huh, with like a teacher. And we also did composition as well and stuff like that. And I took music history and all sorts of things. I eventually did do a diploma program there and do a teacher training certificate and also a performance certificate. But like those 4 years were kind of open-ended for me to learn and explore, and also for my teachers to just pass on whatever knowledge they thought was right, instead of me doing like having to like be on a timeline for, you know, the undergrad or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was very, very flexible, which was very helpful, because if I needed to take like a year and up my knowledge of something or my skill set on something, I could do it without any concern about missing deadlines or something like that. In retrospect, I maybe wish I had gone, because I later went to university and got a history degree, like actual history, like not music history, but I wish I had done that. But at the same time, I think having all that time to absorb music in a natural pace and a natural way was very, very helpful and enjoyable as well.
And what was that program called exactly? What was the, you know, name of that program?
There was no program. I was just studying independently with a lot of other people. I was taking piano lessons, and I was taking composition lessons and theory lessons and musicianship and,
wow,
and guitar lessons, of course, and just absorbing. I was very hungry to absorb.
What did you do with that knowledge creatively?
That's a good question.
Oh,
what
I'm
did
sorry.
I do with it? What did I do?
You're like,
what have I done with my life? Brad, what have you done with your life?
Man. I'm sorry, Brad. Harsh. If anybody asked me that, I know that was, I'm like, so and what ended up happening?
You know what? I will say though, I met some really great people.
Yeah.
Especially after I did the diploma program and stuff like that. And I was hired at the conservatory to teach. there was two other teachers there around my age, Adrian Verdejo, which is he's in Vancouver now. He does lots of new music stuff. And Michael Diaz, he just completed his PhD on Jacques Coutu project and stuff like that. But those two guys, we formed a trio, and we put out an album, which was full of commissions of West Coast.
Yeah, I'm wondering about what happened with the John McLaughlin.
Oh, yeah.
Idea. Yeah, so this is it. There we go.
Well, yeah, and our new music, that was like my... working with those guys on new music was so amazing for me, actually as a learning experience.
Right.
But also, they're my best friends. And I don't know what would have happened without them. I might have gotten bored or something, or not learned enough. But playing all that challenging music and working with composers just kept me learning and kept me engaged and kept me challenged. Michael Diaz and I were such good friends. Like we would play gigs all the time. So we play jazz gigs. We also play classical gigs. We play on the concert stage, classical stuff. But then we play casual jazz stuff. Like, lots of like opportunities to learn from each other and things like that. So that stuff really kept me engaged until, you know, doing bigger projects and whatnot.
I think that's really important for people to hear, is the importance of, especially right after college, really reaching out to your friends and doing those projects while they're still around, because the thing is that people leave. You left, you know, there's people go places, and you don't get these opportunities again when you're young. And I wish that more of the young players would focus on that. On, you know, for me, it was a duo. For you, it was this. I was in a duo with my best friend, you know, after grad school, and it was some of the best years of my entire life.
Yeah.
And it's really important to sort of like, use those friends, you know, in a positive way, and enjoy your time with them, because we won't always have access to musical friendships in a really pure way like that.
And it's good to do it when you're young too. And
because like time.
Yeah, you got time. And like, even though our trio, we got a whole bunch of Canada Council grants. Canada's pretty generous with its arts programs, depending on what government is in power. Mm-hmm. But we were very generous in that way. Although in the end, we always end up in the red on these projects, but it's very fulfilling. And at least some of the composers got a little money.
You're right.
But no, it's like, it's important to do those things, especially when you're young and you don't, you know, you're not worried too much about paying the bills, although there was some student debt there.
Yeah, for sure. But it's... You know, as far as Canada, you just brought up another point about Canada and funding. You know, was your education paid for in Canada? I don't know why I don't know this, but is it federally funded education in Canada?
There's not many like private universities in Canada. It's not like a thing. It's all subsidized by the government. So we do pay, but the prices are generally low. Like tuition's generally low. It's nothing like, you know, the private schools in the States.
So it's not $30,000 to $60,000 a year.
No.
For a professor.
A couple thousand bucks
for an hour a week.
Yeah. And the cool thing is like, in general, all of the schools kind of charge the same. So it like, you can go to whatever province and whatever school.
Right. You can go to McGill, which I guess is like isn't that the Harvard? That's McGill?
Yeah, McGill. But it really, for music, of course, it just depends on what teacher you want to study with. It doesn't really matter. And there's definitely more desirable, you know, there's desirable places to live in Canada that you might want to study at as well.
As far as like, would you be comfortable telling me like, what is the tuition in Canada? Like what's a semester cost in Canada?
Oh, I can't really remember it because that was like,
you know, so small, it's a couple
20 years ago or something. But no, a couple thousand bucks, you know.
Yeah.
Not much. Yeah.
Yeah. We're not talking tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, no. Like under five. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on down here, buddy. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. But there's, you know, there's other costs. Like rent can be really high in Canada still now. Like,
you brought that up. That's so, I mean, just as I guess as a subconsciously American elitist, I had no idea that there was like a rent crisis going on the west coast of Canada.
Oh, all over Canada, really. There's a real housing shortage, and
wow. Yeah.
So it's pretty tough, but things have just kind of they've gone downhill a little bit, you know, over the last 10 years, as they have in other countries as well. Like our system needs some readjustments, of course, especially for young people. Maybe I would be in the last generation that I can maybe, you know, survive. But I feel bad for the young people today because, like, I just don't know how they're going to do it. You know,
are you thinking you're starting to feel like Canada is going further to sort of more of a conservative fiscal, you know, government? Is that what's happening?
I think
look up there and we just see people that aren't, you know, complete morons, you know, disasters. And we just think that they look like, you know, Kennedys. It's insane.
Canada's been pretty lucky in the sense that, like, politically, we're not maybe as divided as some countries. Countries to the south, for example.
You guys don't just universally want to kill your parents like we do down here? Well, my parents are great, but other people, it's like, man, geez.
There's serious, you know, inequalities in wealth in Canada, for sure. Like, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, we have a healthcare system that generally takes care of people. And I would say we've been pretty lucky, and our governments are, you know, more, they have to stay in the center a lot more in order to get votes, because we have multiple parties that compete and whatnot. So,
right. Just
only two parties actually ever win, but they have to fight for votes. They can never go too far to the right or the left. And even though they might threaten the healthcare system and stuff like that, in general, we're keeping it. So
yeah, well, we hope you do. We hope we look to you for that. But you know, as far as like subsidizing your work, you know, some of the stuff that's going on, would you say right now that more or less, I mean, this is Classical Guitar and Warner Editions are Warner Editions. I'm sorry, I keep on saying Warner. Which I'm sure you get once in a while, but Warner Editions and This Is Classical, is that being subsidized by the government at all? Have you been able to sort of figure out a way to make a, it sounds like you're making a living almost primarily with those sites, which is great.
Just in the last year and a half or 2 years. It's become the primary income. But no, it hasn't been subsidized through the government at all.
Wow.
No, I've been lucky to get some like Canada Council projects going, but that's all outside of the site and not connected. The site, I didn't make any money off the site for the first 5 years, just for all those people out there that are starting websites right now, especially due to COVID, which we can talk about more. But the first 5 years, like the first year, I lost money for sure. The second year, I was so happy I could buy a coffee at the end of the year of hard work, like one coffee. But the thing about online work is that it's exponential. Like the more followers you have, the more they share your work, which gets you more followers, which shares your work more. So it's very exponential. But yeah, it's taken a very long time to get that way. And also, This Is Classical Guitar doesn't make any money, really. It never did. Right. And kind of, I hope, never will. I'm trying to keep I'm taking the ads off the site even. I'm trying to keep it just nice and clean. Warner Guitar Editions, yeah, some of the scores are for sale, so that's where some of the money comes in. But people don't have to go to Warner Guitar Editions. They can follow the site for free. It doesn't cost anything. It's open to everyone, free to subscribe. And you don't have to ever go to the store if you don't want to. Right?
That's incredible. I mean, that's like such a, this is what I'm talking about. With you, I really wanted to have you on because, you know, we have a lot of people on who everybody's doing good things, but I know when someone is actually just, I can just tell, is just simply trying to serve the instrument. It's so obvious that that's what you've dedicated your life to.
Well, I would like for everyone that's looking into like doing this kind of stuff, or just my general advice to young musicians is that just whatever work you're doing, whatever work you're currently interested in and you're doing, post it, you know, post it online. Like all the stuff from my site, I didn't care about making money from it because it was for my students. I was teaching.
I agree.
So yeah. I would make additions for my students and I'd put them up there, and it grew and grew, but it was all connected to what I was doing outside. So anyone who wants to start, you know, like a classical guitar corner right off the bat.
Right.
It's tough these days.
That's not what he was doing. That's not what, you know, yeah, it's like, that's no, not what Simon was initially doing. He didn't even have a podcast in the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah. And Simon does it so well, right? Like he's so good. Like everything he does is so high quality. But my advice to lots of young people is like, you can't get there right off the bat. There's a learning curve. And, you know, like I would instead just go on and start sharing stuff, you know, sharing stuff with the community and your friends and your students and your colleagues. And then, you know, you'll slowly learn how to make, you know, videos and learn how to make scores. And maybe one day you'll like, you know, get a little thing for selling your scores online if you want, or do it by donation, or, you know, Patreon is such a great resource these days. And there's so many nice people out there that will just support you on Patreon. Like you can combine all the things that you love and slowly build something that will grow on the side, but just let it be on the side and don't be pushy or anything like that. Just let it grow naturally and be positive. And
I agree with that very much. Yeah. When people go, so what are you doing now with the album? I'm like, there's nothing I can't, I'm just going to just chill, make it, you post it. Maybe more videos are coming out. That's it. I agree. I think it's just like, well, I don't know. You get up and you make a new thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something new. I think especially for our generation, well, especially the generation before us, but like for us, I think some of us still have the frame of mind where you make an album and then it's like, it's on the shelf, like because the record company does it or something, but everything has changed now. Like we need to learn from young people because, for example, when you post YouTube videos, you don't have to post one YouTube video of that piece. You can post it every month. You can play it again and again. Like, it's a service for sharing. It's not a service for documenting your best work necessarily, you know, like, it's just like with your album, you can share it again. You can make a new video for it 10 years from now and let people know about it all over again. You know, like it's a culture of sharing, not necessarily a culture of documentation. Right.
That's interesting. Is that sort of at the back? I mean, I was actually going to ask you, do you have, and this would sort of go against everything that you've been saying and that we were just talking about just now, where, you know, you get up in the morning and you think, you set aside time that's not there. It's for practice. It's for whatever needs to get done. But you get up and you go, okay, well, what am I going to do that's new today? What can I provide? What's the, you know, immediate goal? Do you have a sort of a grand plan at this point, or would you say that that's what I'm gathering is that you don't, is that you just kind of are just sort of day by day adding things, you know, but like, do you have a, I think previous generations would say you map out a career path, or, you know, people always talk about Steve Martin and how he mapped out his comedy. You know, it's, I think about that and I think, oh, I don't think I work that way. I don't think I can work that way. I don't think it's going to work for me that way. I don't think there's a financial backing for me to, you know, create that.
Well, I guess it really depends on what kind of person you are and what your goals are, right? Like for me, I hope that I'm a competent player, but I don't have no like dreams of being like a superstar performer that travels all around, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm a player and I like to share my playing, and if people want to listen, that's great. And I'm happy to do that. So at the moment I'm just working, you know, I'm creating and I'm working like on my newsletter every week. I actually just have the same sentence now at the top, which is like, here are some things I discovered and created this week. And then that's on every newsletter now. And that's true. That's what I'm doing at the moment. I'm just trying to discover stuff to share and then sharing stuff that I'm interested in or that I'm working on. And I do have a workflow, like on a daily basis, I have a workflow that I follow. You know, I spend a certain amount of time in the morning exploring other people's work. So I go on YouTube and listen to a whole bunch of videos and share someone's
stuff.
That's
incredible. So that's the first thing you do when you wake up is you look at some videos of other people.
Yeah, I subscribe to thousands of people, right? Wow. And I get like hundreds of emails every day of people wanting, you know, me to share their stuff and things like that. So I like,
sorry about that.
No. I mean, I like it though. I like it. And, you know, I can't get to everyone, but like I'll click on something and then if there's something, you know, something grabs a hold of me. I'm like, oh, I'm going to share this right now. And I start working on it right away. So there's that section of the morning, which is just about sharing stuff with my followers and trying to get into other people's work, not into my own. Right. So that's like my morning routine. And then after that,
I want to talk about after that, but I just want to say that is so amazingly different from what I think most people do.
Yeah. I mean, not everyone has time to do that. I mean,
well, not everybody has the balls to go and look at what everybody else is doing too. It's, you
that's
know,
true. Be, but I mean, people have jobs, go to work and stuff, you know,
right, like, that's true.
And part of my job is having fun exploring people's work. So I'm lucky to have that. But then after that, you know, I'll practice a bit, try to get in some practice if I can. And then, you know, another section of the day, I'll be working on a background edition of something, long-term editions like ebooks that are, you know, 100 pages long, but also just little tiny things to share, like free stuff or free etudes for the site. So working on that stuff, long-term and short-term stuff. And then other parts of the day, I have to like process videos. Like, you know about this with the podcast, like lots of processing and typing stuff in.
Yeah.
And now, of course, I have a whole nother side because I always hoped that this would be a dream job that wouldn't take up much of my time. But now it's like I have to pay taxes in the European Union and do all sorts of stuff because I'm trying to be legit with taxes and stuff like that. So I have to register in lots of countries and things like that.
Oh, how interesting. You do that.
It's
horrible. it does sound horrible. And I know that, you know, we're kind of talking about this as if it's sort of a lighthearted venture, but in truth, you know, you can go to your site where you review actual, you know, objects, you review guitars, you review accessories for classical guitar. And I've found those really helpful. And what sort of, is that sort of where you kind of are getting involved with international tax law and stuff like that? Or how?
No.
What's been your experience with getting, you know, access to the objects themselves from the companies, getting them on loan? Like, how does that work?
People just contact me. I try not to contact people very often. On occasion, I'll contact someone saying like, oh, I saw your guitar support. It looks so cool.
Right.
Do you want me to review it? And they'll send me one or something like that. I hate reviews, by the way. Like, I love them and I hate them too. I love sharing them, but I don't like criticizing anything. I want my site to be mainly positive. But then there's another side of it where it's like my followers, I don't want to say that everything is good because people might buy the stuff. Right. So like I feel very apprehensive about doing any reviews of any kind.
Yeah.
Album reviews are easy. I mean, I just try to find positive stuff to talk about. Everyone's albums have good stuff in them. Like there's always something interesting. So that's an easy one.
Right.
Product reviews are a little bit harder. But I turn down a lot of products too. If I think I try to just review stuff that I'll like so that I can just be positive.
You just don't want Canadian. I love it. I was dating a Canadian 2 weeks ago who broke up with me and we only dated for a month. She didn't break it. She just was like, I'm not feeling it. I don't think I'm outing her. I think she is not going to listen to this. She's a wonderful, wonderful person.
Yeah.
But she literally, after she said what she said, we continued to, I had made her dinner. It was a COVID dinner. So it was a little like, what are we doing here?
Right.
She stayed and ate. And this went on for 2 hours where she just was clearly didn't want to be rude and leave and just did not. And I was like, look, I need you to use your American side right now and get out.
Well, I'll tell you.
Because she was like, thank you. I'm sorry. I mean, I really, you're great. You're so wonderful. You've been so wonderful. I'm like, I understand I've been wonderful, but you've been great too, but you do not need to stay anymore. Thank you.
Say what you mean.
So sweet.
Yeah. You know, I've been to New York a lot of times. I've been there like 6 or 7 times. Yeah. And, the first time I went there, I was very surprised because people are honest there, right? Yeah. Like they actually tell you what they're thinking, which can be horrifying.
Yeah.
but it's really great. It's like super refreshing too, right? I mean, you hear some horrible things, but like, especially in terms of like sexism and stuff like that. But right. You know, like, but at the same time, like, people are really honest. Like, you know, people in Canada do hide behind this kind of polite surface layer, and it's sometimes really hard to think what they're, you know, what they're thinking inside.
I had no idea, and I that is exactly right. And I mean, this is just a sort of a microcosmic sort of thing, but I asked her the next day, I was like, what was it? She would not, she was like, you are wonderful. The food was wonderful. Your apartment's wonderful. And I was just like, thanks, but can you just, it'll help me. And she's like, you're wonderful. The food, yeah. She refused.
Well, and Canadians will apologize for like, for anything. It doesn't have to be our fault, right? We'll apologize.
That's the old sorry, sorry, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we'll apologize for Trump all you want. Like, I don't, you know, like. We'll do it, but it doesn't mean that we're not saying things behind closed doors. Like Canadians,
doesn't mean you're not having the thoughts. It doesn't mean you're not having the thoughts. And in England, I noticed that too, because I've always been a sorry guy. I'm like sorry, right. Sorry. Like if I'm opening a door for somebody, I will say I'm sorry. And I went to England, and they do that too. They're just like everything. Sorry, sorry, sorry. South England, at least. Sorry, sorry, sorry. I'm down with it. I love saying sorry. It's just I like being apologetic at all times. So that's not the New Yorker in me.
Until it happens when you're playing or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. When I'm playing, how many times I've been on stage and wish I could just tell people I'm sorry.
I used to have a workshop for my students where I'd get them up on stage in front of people and say like, okay, you have to make 5 mistakes in this passage. And like, don't flinch. You own that. Own it. Just own that mistake. Don't you say sorry.
And it was so hard for these Canadian students. But when you're reviewing albums, you said something interesting back there. You said that, you know, when it comes to the products and the albums and just sort of being nice, and it's not just a Canadian thing. You're just a nice guy too, it seems like. But do you, when you're reviewing albums, it is interesting. You know, there's not necessarily... you don't want to say anything bad, it sounds like, right? You kind of want to focus on the positive.
And I generally don't review things. Like I listen to the album.
That's what I'm saying. You don't review things then that you don't like, right?
Yeah. Like within reason. But I mean, I don't know. I used to have more opinions about players, you know, like about what I liked and disliked about their playing. But now I don't know if I feel that anymore. Like I appreciate everyone's playing and like, you know, someone puts out an album, I think that's awesome. Like, way to go. And I always find something I like or something that I can't see in my own playing, which is always interesting. So I don't know. The whole album review thing is really questionable. I try to just do promos now more than anything. It's like a promo and I try to add a few words in there. And even like really good reviews, which I feel like I haven't even done a good review ever, but real good reviews, when you read like a really good reviewer, they teach you something actually, usually. They teach you something, and I haven't quite got there yet. I would like to have more time. I'm kind of short on like physical time to do these kinds of write-ups.
Yeah.
But good reviewers, it's like a history paper, and like it teaches you about the culture and about the repertoire. So I'd like to get more into that, not just about the player, you know, and especially in guitar. So often it's about the player instead of the music sometimes.
Right. The music they're choosing to play.
Yeah. Or like just their exploration of music. Like what did they explore? What did they find? What kind of a project is that album? Like your album is awesome because it's a real project.
Yeah.
It's not just like, oh, here's some Brouwer, here's some Bach, here's some this. This is my professional development showcase.
Right.
Which isn't it can be very good, those albums, but they're not really an interesting project. They're just like a professional document almost sometimes. Yeah. Whereas like every once in a while I hear someone's album and they've done a collected works or they've done some kind of concept that holds the repertoire together.
Right.
Connects the repertoire in some way. And that's super interesting.
I think that is interesting. I interviewed Sean Shebe on the last episode and it was like, he is very conceptual. You know, or at least one of his albums is. And I was just like kind of drawn to that. I was like, that's so interesting how the younger players are thinking very conceptually rather than catalog, which I think is people my age generally would kind of, that was the sort of the Naxos thing, you know, was sort of just creating a catalog.
And collection. Also, we grew up listening to albums that were kind of like like those Bream albums, although Bream maybe is the exception, but like the Williams albums and stuff like that, which are really just like showcasing the repertoire for the first time.
Right.
But it was like random repertoire sometimes. I mean, maybe it would have a heading like Spanish music, but then it'd be like just a huge array of different Spanish stuff. But yeah, certainly like interesting niche projects are definitely the, I think, more.
That's really interesting. I never really thought about those John Williams albums, especially, you know, like the Seville Concert or
right.
You know, the Americas album or whatever. It's like those really were disparate sort of pieces and ideas, you know?
Well, that was an era of
exposure. Album has Albanese and Takamitsu on it or something.
Yeah. You know,
it's crazy.
It was kind of like an era of exposing the public to classical guitar. You know?
It was This Is Classical Guitar before This Is Classical Guitar.
That's right. But now, you know, like, I don't know if that's necessary. And now, like, when you search for albums, there's so many albums, like catalog albums. If you want to find a good recording of Bach, it's not hard. There's going to be hundreds to choose from.
Yeah.
So it's coming up with interesting projects is tough. Of course, there's new music, though. New music is maybe the one place where I don't mind hearing like, you know, an array of different works and different styles and things like that.
Yeah. Well, so as far as like, you know, we're kind of coming to the end now, if that's okay, but is there something that you are doing right now that you would like to speak about, you know, other than we've talked a lot about Werner, obviously there could be something in there that you're working on that you are excited about that you want to share with people. If there's any recordings going on, anything like that?
No.
I can't tell you.
Well, sure. I always have interesting things. Like one of the things that I'm interested in right now, I mean, obviously, I just bought a house. I kind of need to like make sure I just like produce lots of. I have to work every day.
Yeah.
So I don't have a lot of like.
You're trying to justify your house purchase.
Yeah.
Like, look, I'm working. I'm trying.
I don't have a ton of personal projects. One project that I'm kind of interested in is like I was mentioning, Erin, my partner. She plays piano, so. We're making additions in the background, which we haven't released yet, but we're making additions of piano and guitar repertoire. And so, you know, stuff that was originally written for guitar and piano.
How? What? Like what?
Oh, there's all sorts of stuff. You know, we're doing some of the Merz works right now for terz, guitar, and piano. And there's all sorts of stuff historically that are out there. There's not tons of it compared to other instrument combinations.
I haven't heard the Merz. Is that like a prepared piano? Like, how do they deal with the dynamic differences between the instruments?
It was a different era.
Put the cover pianos down, put a rug on it?
Well, pianos weren't always, you know, like, the pianos weren't always as powerful as they are today. And the terz guitar is tuned up. It's pretty bright sounding. So you have, if you're going to do it on a modern guitar, you have to have a capo, right? So it kind of cuts through. And if it's the piece is written well, then the guitar should stand out. Like even in the Giuliani concertos and stuff like that, the guitar kind of is left alone when it's playing. Not the orchestra isn't doing much. So when the pieces are written with that in mind, they can work just fine. So we're planning on publishing a lot of that stuff because there doesn't seem to be publications of it, and we'll try to record it all as well.
Incredible.
And we're doing other projects. Like I'm working on the lute suites, which is a nightmare. But that's been really interesting to see, like if you compare the original to like the Kuntz edition, there's a lot of rewriting going on. Like just to see how much has had to be rewritten, that's really interesting. But another thing I'm doing right now is I've been teaching really full time for the last 16 years, and between teaching full time and running the website and running around town and stuff like that, I haven't had a lot of time for personal practice. And so right now I'm trying to just up my playing again, get back into practicing. I've been releasing some etudes on the site, specifically connected to my own weaknesses.
Yeah.
Well, I talk about good. That so a you're lot.
Sharing your weaknesses.
I'm sharing my weaknesses with the world, a list of my weaknesses so you can go after me. But like right hand muting, there's the, you know, that Giuliani etude, number 2 from his Opus 1 that with the right hand muting, it's like, it's pretty tough. And like, I was practicing it and I was really bad at it. So I decided like I should make an edition of this and like record a video of it because that will force me. And that's something I've done with the site all along too, is try to force myself to like improve by making an edition for the site and then improving my own playing by putting it on the site. So it's like a personal project, personal improvement project, but I get to share it too, and maybe other people will try it out as well. So lots of that kind of stuff happening.
That's great. Challenging ourselves is why we're here in the first place. So yeah, it's good that you're sticking with that. I think that that's just sort of, that's got to be the lifeblood of any classical musician, not just guitarist. Yeah, exactly. Is just constantly striving to be better. And, you know, I'm glad that you're doing that.
And I'm also trying to find, like, I'm trying to find as many pieces in the repertoire that aren't too difficult to play, but are high quality. Because they're just not played often enough, you know, like students are so often playing repertoire that's just so too difficult for them.
Yeah.
Partly because they want to explore more of the range of the instrument and stuff, but those pieces exist out there and there's all sorts of like, well, for example, like the resurgence of exploring like female composers and female guitarists. Mm-hmm. There's tons of repertoire out there by female composers and guitarists and we don't know about it, but it's out there to explore and all we have to do is look for it. So, and there's all sorts of examples of that kind of material out there. So everyone can dive into that stuff and share what they find.
Do you have something on the site that features female guitarists or female guitar composers or anything?
Not a specific area, although there is a great website. It's Women of the Guitar or something like that. You can find them on Twitter.
I think I've seen at least like the Instagram for it or something.
They have a great database. But you can even find it just by searching. I mean, like when you look through the history, like Madame Pratton, she's got a whole bunch of stuff, like, and it's all readily available on, you know, on the, Wiki Commons and stuff like that. And you can find that material. It's so easy. You just have to go looking for it.
Well, thank you for bringing not only that, but, you know, more and more every single day material to light for us.
Thank you. On behalf
of all of us, we love it.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I was looking through the list of people you've had on the site, and it's a treasure, man. Like, some of my favorite people you've had on the site recently, like Eros Barak.
Very much a man of your own, you know, ilk, the two of you.
I love Eros, and he actually came and visited me in Canada along his vacation trip. But he's such a nice fellow. And Matthew McAllister, you had on there the other day, and he's very generous with his sharing.
That guy's me and Matthew McAllister, I swear to God, I just should just move to Scotland. I love that guy. I loved having him on, and it's just like, just the way he talked and everything. It's the accent, but it's also just like there is absolutely nothing off limits.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
With those guys, it's just great.
Yeah, but like, you know, the list of people you've interviewed on the podcast has been amazing, and you're a great example of what you were talking about before of just sharing. Like, you've been doing this for a long time. Like, how long have you been doing the podcast?
I thought it was 2012. My brother printed up some sort of press release. I think I sent you that. And it said 2013. I don't know. I thought it was one of those.
That's so amazing. Like, that might be my advice to anyone's like in the arts, is just keep doing it. Just keep doing it, because it builds up. And then you have something to show for it. It's so great. Just don't stop. You know?
Yeah. And I wish, and that's the thing, is like, monetization is a term that gets thrown around a lot. And it's like, I don't think you can worry about that so much. I just don't think that's the way you're going to make $1 million.
When COVID hit, everyone like suddenly trying to monetize their YouTube videos. And it was like, oh, don't do it. Just like, keep posting music and you'll get subscribers and you can worry about that stuff later. Don't worry about it.
Haven't you found that? It really is about just keeping the material churning along rather than trying to get everything perfect or whatever. Just keep it coming. Keep it coming out regularly. Exactly. Super important.
People will notice, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And I hope you have a wonderful, what else you got planned today? You on your way out somewhere, or you, there's nowhere to go. You could just go on a hike.
There's nowhere to go. Brad, what have you done with your life? And there's nowhere to go.
Brad,
what did you do?
Yeah, what did I say? I said, Brad, what'd you do with all that stuff you learned?
Squandered it.
You've done it. It sounds like you've done plenty. So thanks again, Brad.
All right. Thanks so much.
That's it for my time with Bradford. I hope you guys had a good time. I hope you enjoyed that. And I'm going to go ahead and get on with my day. I'll see you next time with the president and some people from the marketing team over there at Guitar Salon International. If you've ever wondered about that sort of side of our business, we get into it in a way that I think is relevant. So it's a fun interview. I'll see you guys next time. Please stay safe. Wear your mask. All right. Don't be silly. Don't be stupid.